Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today. Hey, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hi, Susan, and happy April Fool's Day.
And I have an April Fool's joke. Well, at least it fits into our program for today, which is about road trips. And this is part of the evolution of our road trip programs because it all started with an April Fool blooper. It was recorded by accident and is actually the origin of the way we began framing our programs as road trips. Here's the story. Back in January of 2013, before we were able to do live programs for Local Talk, every program had large elements of pre-recorded interviews. I had been working for some time on a story about the towns that make up the Ballard School District in South Story County, focusing on the memories of people who could tell me about the school consolidation. I had gone out to do several individual interviews and then turned them over to the other producers for Local Talk with my ideas of a script. By the end of the day, actually the middle of the night before they had to go on the air, the other producers had scrapped my script and found the three best interviews, Mildred Brendelin of Kelly, Nels Nord of Huxley, who was our guest last week, and Monty Sesker of Cambridge. The story was no longer about school consolidation, but about what life was like in Southern Story County when the railroads and horse-drawn wagons were important means of transportation. So Sarah Hegland and Ursula Rudenberg came up with the idea that would turn it into a fictional road trip. Ursula had gone online to get cars beeping as they passed, and then about 11 o'clock, they called me to come in to the studio and record a narrative as if I were driving down the road and stopping by along the way to visit Mildred Brendelin, Nels Nord, and Monty Sesker. When I got to the station, they had decided that they needed road noise in the background, so they asked me to go out and get it. Actually, the story is on the tape. So I went out and I got in Debunka's car, figuring out how to turn the car on. And okay. Everything was different in it. Turn the radio off and it was raining, so I didn't want the windshield wipers to interfere with the road noise too much, so I would ride a little with the windshield wipers and then turn them off. And there were turn indicators, so this isn't all too exciting. And then I went on Main Street to Clark, and I turned right on Clark, and I was literally driving around the block, and then I was just by the post office. I noticed lights behind me. A policeman was behind me. Now this is 11:30 on Sunday night, not another car on the road except the policeman and me. So the policeman got out of his car and came over. He's standing outside in the rain, knocking on the window.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to open the door. I'm sorry, I'm driving somebody else's car.
Okay, I'm Officer Sheep with the Ames Police Department.
And I was speeding, right?
No, you don't have your lights on, headlights or taillights.
Oh, I'm sorry, as I said, it's somebody else's car.
Okay, were you speeding?
I don't think so. I'll tell you what I'm doing, it's really weird.
Yeah?
I'm at KHOI, and we're doing a show about... I mean, this is so unbelievable, it doesn't sound possible. Okay. We're doing a show about the towns in South Story County. And we said, you know, what would be neat would to be make this to sound like a road trip. So we should get out and drive around the block and you know, get road sounds.
All right.
And I'll show you my recorder. We're being recorded right now. And so I didn't have my car, so somebody else in the station gave me your keys, said just, you know, drive around the block and get road sounds. And so the reason I thought I might be speeding is because when I was on Main Street, you know, I didn't see anything, but I thought, well, why should I confess? I don't know what I was doing. I thought, well, I better slow down. And then when I saw you, I thought, oh my gosh, what was I doing? But I had no idea that I didn't have my lights on, because I drive a Prius where the lights go on automatically. So I didn't even think about lights. I don't know.
Do you have your license, registration, and insurance?
Shoot, probably not, because let me see if I have that in my purse. Probably, I only brought my briefcase because I didn't have my car, so I wasn't expecting to drive. So I don't have it.
How about the registration, the insurance?
Let me see what she has. I don't know where anything is here. She probably has it in here. If not, she probably has it.
Spell your last name for me.
Franzen.
First name?
Susan. Susan.
Your middle name?
Lloyd. Lloyd. Lloyd.
Date of birth?
June 1st, 1937. And I'm not seeing her here. Maybe this is the registration. This is the registration? No, Ivy Pharmacy.
Well, that clip certainly demonstrates that a spirit of adventure and a sense of pluckiness can't hurt when you're trying to get the job done at KHOI.
Well, Susan, you got in deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yes, now, I did.
Now, what did you do with the road noise after you got it?
Well, I think that in order to show you, I really need to play just a little bit of what we use the next day to introduce Mildred Brendelin and a little about her. I'm your host today, Susan Franzen, and I'm leaving for South Story County. Want to join me on a road trip? We're heading down U.S. 69. We're on our way to talk to Mildred Brendelin, who is one of the oldest residents of Story County. She lives at Ballard Creek Community Assisted Living in Huxley, but she grew up in a farm right here near Kelly. There's the turnoff for Kelly. I'm the rural correspondent for KHOI, and I keep hearing about the Ballard Creek District. Today, I'm going to find out what it is and what's going on in South Story County. Let's start with Mildred, because she can tell us what life was like in the early days. She's 102 years old.
Born on a farm near Kelly, is that right?
Yes. And our house burned when I was about 9 months old.
And then what happened?
Well, then my mother carried me over to one neighbor, and we stayed there for one night. And there was an old bachelor that lived to the east of us, and he came over and he said, Mrs. Dearness, he says, I'm a bachelor, and I'm not a very good housekeeper, but you're so welcome to come and live with me. And you can do whatever you want to my house. So we went and lived with him for about a year until the fellow that owned the land built the house.
So, Susan, those were your first road trips then?
Not really. The first road trips I took were with you when I thought I couldn't do interviews by myself. You remember? Before KHOI went on the air, you and I were assigned to go out and get interviews from all the mayors of Story County. You did the interviews, and I just pushed the buttons on the recorder. But everywhere we went, you seemed to know something special about the place or have some connection with the people. And you were used to live radio, so you were always at ease. I was just awestruck by the way your interview sounded. I wanted to do a program that would capture that sense of being with someone who really knew the area. That's how I got the idea of billing us as the county reporters.
And when we did our first road trip to the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum, I made sure that our car noises were authentic. I'm going to play a clip from the beginning of that show to illustrate what I mean. Listen for the train and the jazz playing on 89.1 on the car radio. This is Susan Franzen of Ames, co-host today with
Paul Wearson of Story City, and we're the county reporters inviting you to join us for a road trip to the surrounding area.
This was a trip we started as Paul drove down from Story City to pick me up at my home in West Ames. While I'm getting my field recorder ready, Paul, why don't you describe the car you'll be driving for our road trip?
Well, it's my trusty 1996 Buick Deluxe Park Avenue with all the push buttons and along with a great sound system. It's a beautiful car, a heavy car, and I'll hate to get rid of it on the day it dies.
Paul and I are just pulling out on Ontario Road, which is a little strip of the old Lincoln Highway. We'll dip down to New Highway 30, Lincoln Way, and we're heading west. We're listening to a little cool jazz on radio station KHOI 89.1 FM. And there's a train going by as we drive along. Did you hear that, Paul?
Yeah, I hear the train in the distance.
Of course, this is the theme of the day because we're going to...
Oh, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. We're going there now. It's not even... Well, it's the off-season. What are we doing going to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad this time of year?
We're really going to the new James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center, which is located at the railway station for the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. This is actually a good time for our program because there won't be crowds and the museum director can show us around easily. The real reason for this trip today is to visit James H. Andrew himself. He lives in Jefferson and he's in his 90s. Debbie Bunka, another KHOI reporter, recently interviewed him and was enthralled, but she warned me that we shouldn't wait.
Well, okay, now we're on the way to Boone. And a lively downtown business district, and west of there is the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway.
And that's where the museum is. Well, here we are.
Come and ride the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. Turn back them old hands of time. See the beautiful Des Moines River Valley on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
That was a fun visit, both to the museum and to James H. Andrew. I thought you did, actually you did the entire interview with James H. Andrew, but we won't be playing that today. We're doing a little clips of nostalgia, but I think that whole show is so tight and interrelated that we'll wait and do a rebroadcast sometime when people
can. Well, it was a wonderful day, and I was so impressed that he was able to amass all this railroad memorabilia and then so generously donate that to the museum and make sure all that happened. And it was a little sad that we couldn't go out on the railway that day. It was winter, but yeah, I just thought that was a very good visit, and I was so proud of Boone, and I was so enthralled by the idea that they had marshaled all these volunteers to run this marvelous Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. And I was truly impressed by the leadership and the people we interviewed. It was just fun.
Yes, it certainly was. And when people get to hear the whole thing, they'll hear just how you were practically playing with the toys that they had in the Jefferson station. Actually, that's a story we might tell. When we visited James H. Andrew, why don't you tell that? You kind of looked out at the yard where the Jefferson station used to stand and...
Well, you know, what impressed me was he had built that home with his own hands, and it was overlooking an area that was scenic. And then he had all these things that he'd preserved right there in his backyard that pertained to the railway. So there was something truly authentic about him. He wasn't kidding. He was a railroad guy. And it was particularly now since he's passed away. I really value that experience because he was one of a kind, and I think it's just so wonderful that somebody who had a lifetime interest in the railroads and amassed all this memorabilia was willing to share it and make it part of the community and part of that attraction, because the museum is such an additive to the experience of the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. It's not just a train ride anymore. And thanks to him, it's a happening place.
That's right, with lectures and all kind of things going on. And the story of the Jefferson Station, which, of course, wasn't a real station. He built it. It was much smaller than a real railway station. And he stored some of his, I guess, probably teletype machines and so forth in it. And so when they built the museum, they moved the Jefferson Station into the site, put it on the concrete, and then put up the walls around it. So
that's really remarkable. You go in there and it's really a step back in time. That's a total that office looks just like it did, I'm sure, sitting by a rail line back in the old days, and you could just look in there and see a snapshot of time, and that's what a museum is all about. It's an experience of looking at something in the context in which it happened. It's not on a shelf. That's really an office sitting by a rail line circa turn of the century, or before.
That's right. Actually, one of the other purposes of our road trips, besides having a good time ourselves, is to give our listeners ideas of places they can go on road trips that would be fun. Of course, they won't be able to interview James H. Andrew, but if they hear our program, they will have that information in their minds when they see the museum.
Well, it continues to amaze me how people just aren't aware of all the things within easy driving distance for an outing with the family. We just aren't aware. We don't think and investigate unless someone happens to present it like we are in these road trips and remind people that, hey, this is right in your backyard. It's interesting. It's fun. There are fantastic people involved, and you're going to have a good time without driving all the way across the state or into another state.
And speaking of that, of course, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway does have people driving from other states and even coming from other countries. And we did then, with a follow-up interview last Christmas, we talked to Fenner Stevenson, who I think was there probably certainly before Mike Wendell, who's the new director of the museum, and maybe even before James H. Andrew made his donations, because he's been running trains for a long time. And he talked to us about the Polar Express and gave us a little feeling of what it's like to ride the train.
Well, we use the name Santa Express, but in the movie Polar Express, the train flies. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but it flies. Well, with us, they'll come up to the end of the depot, and we'll be talking to them, and they'll say, "Yeah, Daddy, this train flies." "No, Johnny, that's only in the movies that the trains fly. Yeah, this one probably won't fly." "Oh, I'll bet it does." Well, then we take off, and we go out, and when we get out just short of the North Pole, we go across Bass Point Creek High Bridge. And it's a single-track bridge, of course.
Right.
And when you look out the windows, you look down 156 feet, and there's nothing down there.
You're flying.
You're flying. And that's when the little kids will look at their dad and mom and say, "Huh?" So that's really exciting.
And you began selling tickets November 1 for this.
Right. Our members of the Iowa Railroad Historical Society can buy starting the 15th of October. But the general public, they go on sale November 1st. And we generally put them online midnight on October 31st. And when we come in the next morning, we'll have a lot of orders to fill.
So it's instant success.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's people. They start calling in July wanting to know when they can get Santa Express.
It looks like you're booked forever in terms of interest. It's going to happen annually, that people will come back and make sure they ride the Christmas trains. And during this time of the year, It really adds to the festivity and the, well, the tradition, the nostalgia of Christmas. It plays into so many things. And whether you have snow or not, it's still the Santa train.
We always have snow at the North Pole.
You do? Okay.
It's become a family tradition. We've got a lot of families. Had a family the other day I talked to, and they drive up from Kansas City to ride the Santa Express. And it's one of those things when I look at it with all the problems we've got in the world right now, it's so much fun to watch these families come, and for an hour or two, they just are having fun. There's no worry about anything. Well, maybe how many cookies they're going to get, but there's just no worry about anything. It's just family fun.
So it's so unique, and it's such a out-of-the-world experience, really, because you're getting on the train, which to many people nowadays is nostalgic in and of itself.
Oh, sure.
Not that many people have experience traveling by rail. And then you have all the allure of the Polar Express and the media that's built up around trains and Christmas. That all works in your favor. And then here we are in this beautiful scenic area with a very high bridge, the illusion of flying. What do you want beyond that?
Well, that's the whole thing right there. I mean, we're very fortunate with our line because we do have the different terrain that we go across. We go across through the Iowa flatland, and then we disappear down into the valley, and as we go across that bridge, and then shortly after we get across the bridge, then we, of course, arrive at the North Pole. And as the train pulls in, it's all lighted alongside of the train, and we've got the Santa's North Pole Depot. The North Pole Depot is there, and Christmas trees, and just all kinds. There's a reindeer in the pins, and just a lot of festiveness about the North Pole. And I remember one time I had a little kid. I was going through the train, and I had a little boy look at me, and he says, "This isn't the real North Pole." And I said, "What? What do you mean it's not the North Pole?" Well, he says, "North Pole doesn't have any trees." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Have you been to the North Pole?" "Well, no." "Well, how do you know it doesn't have trees?" "Oh, well, maybe it does."
That's a precious moment.
Yeah, you know, we get all kinds of stories like that, that the kids, they're just so excited. Some of these little kids, when they get on the train, they just are beside themselves. They're so excited.
It would be fun to take that trip just to watch the children, actually.
Oh, yeah. And the volunteers, this is one of the times when we have volunteers, because almost all the people that work the train for us, serving hot chocolate, making hot chocolate, all of this stuff that it takes to put it together, they love it. They enjoy seeing it. And some of them have been here for years doing this with us, reading the story. We have our own book that's been written, because we don't read the Polar Express. So we have our own book that's been written for us.
Well, that's great. So it's like a storyteller.
Right,
too.
Yep. There's just a lot of fun involved with it.
We've been talking with Fenner Stevenson, who's general manager of the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, about the Santa Train and all the events associated with the holidays on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. It's been truly delightful today, Fenner, to talk with you. It's always fun to talk to somebody who loves their work, loves the environment they work in, and loves the people who they work with, and loves the folks who come in the door to experience the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway's Christmas trains, the Santa train. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, folks.
That was fun to meet him. You know, it's, as I said in the tape there, it's just great to meet someone who's enjoying their job and so dedicated to it. You could just see that he was someone who's thrilled to do this, has fun doing it, enjoys all the volunteers. And when you look at all the situations people find themselves in, there are a lot of people who hate to go to work every day because they don't like their work. Well, not Fenner. He was really having fun, and it was very informative to me because I thought of the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway as a summer thing, and here we are going out at Christmas, too. That was new to me, so I found out and learned something that day, Susan.
Well, I think they do a lot more than just Christmas. I looked at the schedule, and I think they're already starting trains, will be starting trains in May, I believe. And certainly anybody interested should go online and find out, because they have all kind of special events and special trains, dessert trains and dinner trains. And I know they have a lot in the fall, but I think they as soon as spring comes, I think they're going to be out there. They've got thousands and thousands. I wish I could remember the number. It's well over 10,000, I think, who come every year. But one of the things that's about the railway is that it also ties into many other historic things. The most noted is Kate Shelley. And people today may not know the story of Kate Shelley. Maybe they read it in a children's book. But it is really quite a remarkable story. And we did actually a couple of programs on it. One, we did mostly archival things, actually Kate Shelley's own account of the night she saved the train, and many responses, songs, and so forth. And I think that the other thing to really mention in terms of road trips is the Moingona Station, because south of Highway 30, there's a little turnoff just after the Boone crossing. There's a road to Moingona. It's right by the Seven Oaks ski lift. And you go a mile or two and turn left, and there's this beautiful little red station, and it's a real station. The original one burned down, and this one came, I learned from Pam Schwartz when she gave us a tour of the station, that this station came from a town called Beaver. And when we did our drive out to visit James H. Andrew, I remember passing a sign to Beaver, and I said I'd never heard of it, and you apparently had. But it used to be a stop on the railway, and then when it no longer was, then they sold their station to be moved over to Moingona. But it's a beautiful little three-room station with lots of pictures and a model of the Kate Shelley land, which is really remarkable. But for those who don't know the story of Kate Shelley, there's a great ballad written by Tom Richards and Al Harris, who wrote our theme music, just the Ballad of Kate Shelley.
July 6th, 1881, a fierce storm was raging. The rain just wouldn't stop coming down. We're flooding in the Des Moines River Valley near the railroad station by Moingona Town. Around 11 in the evening, a pusher train went out to search for men looking for washouts along the track. When they passed the Shelley family home, a mighty crash the Shelleys heard. The Honey Creek Bridge had just collapsed. 15-year-old Kate Shelley ran outside into the storm, saw two men trapped down in that river grave. She couldn't rescue them herself, but knew that midnight train would be sooner coming down the tracks this way. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate had to hurry to warn Moingona Station, and that old trestle bridge was the only way. Through the darkness and the storm, she crawled on her hands and knees across that tiny catwalk in the pouring rain. Way across the river, a tree crashed into the trestle. Kate was sure that shaky bridge would fall apart. Just at the last moment, that tree slipped through the pier's knees, the fear of death beating in her heart. When Kate reached the other side, she ran to Mongona Station, warning them that the bridge had just washed out. The agent stopped the train just before it passed through, otherwise that train would have been hellbound. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate led a rescue train and saved the two men in the river, and Lord, only two men lost their lives. Many more would have died if not for this young girl's courage. What bravery Kate Shelley showed that night. What bravery Kate Shelley showed that night. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train.
The Ballad of Kate Shelley, the all-time heroine of Iowa, Kate Shelley. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1. where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area right here in central Iowa. Susan Franson and I are your co-hosts today, serving as county reporters telling about road trips past. Now, what's next, Susan?
Well, don't you think we should tell about our visit to Robbie Peterson in Jefferson?
Yes, I do.
Well, you've known Robbie since he had his wood shop in Story City.
Yes, Robbie is a gifted man. He is very knowledgeable about the era of the late 19th century. Everything is authentic about Robbie. He does everything as if it's 1876 or 1875.
Yeah.
And he's also a talented actor and has put together a theater down there in Jefferson. And I don't know how he fits all that into his time available. He's building furniture. He's producing shows. He's promoting his business. And he's really a very, very gifted man, and his wife is working in tandem with him to make it happen. And he's got a coterie of people who are part of his theatrical company who star and help produce the shows. He's a very, very busy guy and a very fascinating person to visit. One of my favorite road trips so far.
Yes. Well, it's certainly is fascinating and sort of awe-inspiring. I have a couple clips, but one where he basically tells what RVP 1875 is. And then another where you sum it up in your response that after seeing it at the time. But I think that the story about how he went from Story City to Jefferson is interesting. He grew up in Jefferson, but then he did this internship at Living History Farms and learned to make period furniture by hand and do all the very, very skilled things that are required to do dovetails by hand and so forth. And then he set up this shop in Story City. But as he became more successful, he outgrew that space. And when he went on out to look for other places, Jefferson just happened to have a very large brick lumber yard that was standing empty. And they made that available to him. And so it was a very happy arrangement because I think his business and theater was like the number one – was designated the number one tourist attraction of Iowa a couple of years ago. So it is really a place to go. And so let's play that little clip when he describes this.
We're in the year 1875 with everything we do. That's the year I do all of my research. And that's the year we use all the tools from, all the techniques from. But being in the year 1875 Iowa, we get to build two generations of furniture. See, some people are just getting here in that covered wagon. They're those pioneers I've been talking about. But some people have been here 40 years already. And they're ready for the 8-foot wardrobe and the 10-foot tables. Full time. They didn't need to save space. They just needed good furniture. So we call that second generation furniture.
So after he gave that introduction, he showed us various pieces that he'd built. And it's just awe-inspiring.
Oh, yeah. You know, it puts you back in touch with the reason people had furniture in the first place, which was to protect against invasion by mice and all that sort of thing. And all the things he has on display there are very practical. A lot of it's very heavy. It's made out of wood that he finds himself and cures. And what I like about what he does is it's so authentic, you know. And then his price scale is always based on inflation since 1875. So he tracks that growth in what furniture costs today. So his price now reflects the inflation since 1875. He's done all the homework on this, and I've been on stage with Robbie, and he's a consummate actor. So look at all these varied talents wrapped up in one man, plus the ability, enthusiasm, and just plain energy to promote this. And he is he's also at the fair, the state fair every year. He has a big area in the Pioneer Hall where he puts on his display. So this man doesn't pause to take a breath. I'm very impressed, if nothing else, by his consummate energy and approach toward life. He's the most alive person I know in this area, I think.
Well, I think his wife is pretty alive. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, at the moment, I don't remember her first name, but I'll tell you, number one, she's a teacher. So she's got a day job in addition to acting, like many actors. Often they do two-person shows, or sometimes four-person. But they did Oklahoma as a two-person show. And they just cross-dressed whatever characters they needed. They played them. And it must have been a very entertaining version.
Yeah, they condensed Oklahoma down to 45 minutes. Just yes. Using the two people. But then, you know, a lot of his shows have a full theatrical company on stage. And it's a beautiful area. And he's got seating in there and a lot of other amenities. It's just a nice little area that he's isolated behind his business to have a full-blown theater. And he's a visionary. You know, he saw that space as having that potential. You have to have vision, you know, to make things happen. And that's another ingredient that Robbie has in great profusion.
I don't very often contradict you, Paul, but that space is hardly little. It is huge. It's a big, cavernous former lumber yard, and it's got balconies, and it's got so much space that they can have a dinner theater up in the balcony, and then people can come down and sit in the comfortable seats that they have managed to procure for the theater. And they don't have a very large seating capacity because basically he wants everybody to have the optimum experience. And it's really quite amazing what all he's thought of, as you said. But I think it's okay to hear your summary on the spot.
Listen up, this is the story of Robbie Peterson, a man who returns to his hometown, ironically, to do cutting-edge things. That's a good story.
Our tagline with our theater, we're the History Boy Theater Company, but it's we call ourselves a big city theater in a small town. You know, that's what we're out to prove that can be done. And it's been an experiment, but it's not anymore. It's been proven you can do it.
19th century furniture in the 21st century.
You got it. 1875 in the front half and modern theater in the back.
Well, you are a Renaissance man. I think you might be irreplaceable when you have your skills at furniture making and your depth of knowledge of that era and all the things you're doing with your business, and then somehow that fits in with live theater and all the things you've been able to accomplish here for what kind of shows you've been able to put up on stage. I'm just impressed you have premieres you've done here. That's terrific. And I'm not sure there's anywhere you can find that rare combination.
Well, that was our trip to Jefferson. That's a couple of trips to Jefferson. But before we leave the road trip theme, let's go to one of our most successful recent road trips to the Nyland Cafe. And we have one of our new twists. And now we have traveling music to start our road trip. After a little traveling music, we will invite you to join us on our road trip to Nyland's Cafe at the crossroads of the Lincoln and Jefferson Highways in Cola.
On the road again, going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson.
Well, going back to the Colo area there, where we do the Speak Up program, one of the perks of going there every week is I get to eat lunch at Nyland's Cafe. In a recent visit, I talked with Sandra Human Kelly, who actually agreed to tell us about the gas station and cafe and motel, which make up the one stop of this historic corner of the Jefferson and Lincoln Highways.
And I have that interview on tape, so let's listen.
I'm the owner-operator, yes.
And your name?
Sandra Human Kelly. And actually, the Nyland's Cafe is part of the Reed Nyland site, as it's referred to, which is actually owned by the city of Colo. So I lease the cafe and the motel.
And how long have you had it?
We're in year four with our business. And the restoration, actually, of the cafe and the station was done in 2003. And then in 2008, they restored six of the motel units, and that was added to the configuration.
I love the motel. It's the old mom-and-pop motel.
Absolutely.
That we all remember from the 50s with the probably chenille bedspreads and that sort of
thing. Got little quilts on there, very cozy, and but yet modern amenities. We have wireless and cable and
you know,
the things people look for in traveling and comfort. Wireless is almost essential anymore. You wouldn't try to imagine how people traveled before they had internet connectivity.
Well, now that the Lincoln Highway is no longer the major east-west highway, people have to come off the new Highway 30 to get here. So do people have much trouble finding you?
I don't think so. I think it's for many people, it's a very intentional stop. We have visitors, if you browse through the guest log, from all the states and actually various countries, find their way here and are specifically looking to pay us a visit from either they've heard word of mouth or have done the research. The Lincoln Highway is actually well labeled on Google Maps, so you can type that in as a search and find the path and, you know, attractions that will pop up and so forth. And then the Iowa Lincoln Highway Association has done a fantastic job of getting working with the DOT and the RC&Ds, which manage the Heritage Byway, to get the signs up that really have helped it along. We got those up just in time for the Lincoln Highway Centennial.
And the Lincoln Highway Centennial was last year?
It was in 2013, and we have an exciting year coming up again next year, the Jefferson Highway Centennial. And this is the crossroads of the two. The Lincoln is very well known. You know, there's been the PBS show and a number of wonderful books exploring it. But the Jefferson's a little lesser known, but hopefully that'll be changing with the additional publicity of the centennial. We just had a couple through from Michigan that were traveling the entire length, and they actually mentioned that they were traveling to Lincoln and had stopped here,
Really? Picked
up a brochure off our counter, just like many people do, and became aware of the Jefferson and kind of put that on their list for, let's do that sometime. So they just finished that a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
the Jefferson goes from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and makes its way down to this point, and then it follows its path the rest of the way to end in New Orleans. So
did you hear that train?
Yes, I did.
You can't get away from trains.
Trains are a red thread that runs through all our programming this year somehow.
Well, as we end, I'd like to end with a very unusual road trip that you didn't happen to be along on. This one was connected with some interviews I've done with Ed Fallon, who last year walked all the way from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., over a period of, I guess, 8 months. And this year, because of his concern with the proposed Bakken pipeline or Dakota Access Pipeline, he is walking that route, not quite the same way. He's walking along the route so that he can talk to the landowners. And that's the way you find the landowners. You walk along, and when you come to their house, you knock on the door. And he's also making presentations along the way, which, of course, don't quite fit with this walking route. So he has to piggyback with his car. And I got a call last week, and he asked me if I could give him a ride from Kelly to Cambridge. And he described where I was to pick him up, which was Highway 69 near Kelly, or his route over, which was is where I actually picked him up, and you'll hear about that when I talk to him. But I thought, what an irony. This is the place where our story began, was near Kelly and near Mildred Brendelin's family farm. And you'll hear about that from Ed. I just met Ed Fallon, who's walking the pipeline route in South Storey County. I picked him up on 282nd Street near Kelly. Hi, Ed. What kind of a day is it?
Oh, it's a miserable day. well, compared to the last 2 weeks, the weather today has been, less than ideal. Compared to the first week when one morning I got up and it was 17 below zero with the wind chill, today's just fine. 30s and raining, I'll take that over 17 below wind chill factor. So we're okay.
Well, as you can hear, there's a little rain coming down on the car roof, so this gives us just a little ambiance.
We have ambiance and we stay dry. It's the best of both possibilities.
That's right.
Yeah, well, by the way, Storey County, beautiful place. I've been walking on roads I never knew existed and passing lots of beautiful little farms. I mean, some big, wonderful farms as well with rich black soil. But also a lot of little, quaint little farms with horses and other critters and just, it's a landscape you don't really want fouled by a pipeline, or especially if a pipeline breaks, what would happen then? So, I've been very pleased with what I've been encountering, despite the rain and the somewhat cool temperatures.
I noticed that in your comments, both online and in the meeting that I attended in Ames, that you have a very nice, non-threatening attitude about people that disagree with you. Even though you feel very strongly about this and you work very hard on it, you can see the other side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I certainly understand landowners who are being offered, you know, money for an easement. These are tough times, and in some cases, they feel compelled to want to accept that payment. And I also understand the arguments that, people will say trains are dangerous, they explode, we ought to get it into pipelines. I understand the argument that we ought to get away from Mideastern oil because we've been at war too long in the Middle East. But my response to both those, and I respect those opinions, they're commonly out there, but I think there's some missing information that I at least try to offer people to consider. One, trains explode, but pipelines also leak. Pipelines have a horrible track record of leaking. There are pages and pages of information about pipelines breaking, leaking, having accidents. And the other thing is, no one will tell you that, they say that we need to get oil off of trains and into pipelines, but nobody will say that if we build this pipeline, there will be less oil moving by train. And I think that's because there won't be. The railroad companies would not be okay with this pipeline if it meant they were going to lose a lot of business. So all this does is increase capacity. And to the issue of foreign oil versus domestic oil, well, yeah, I'm as happy as anybody to envision a future where we're not going to war in the Middle East. But the question is this oil from North Dakota and eventually, in all probability, in my opinion, from the tar sands region of Canada, is that oil going to be used here in the U.S. or is it for export? And my thought is if they were going to use it in the U.S., they would build a refinery in North Dakota. They wouldn't ship it to a port in Texas. From there, it gets refined and then shipped overseas. And then, yeah, granted, some of it might stay here, but I think if they were serious about reducing our dependency on foreign oil extensively, they'd make sure all that stayed here, and they wouldn't be shipping it to Texas to be refined.
That sounds like a pretty good argument.
Some people are swayed by it. Others, they've got their counter-arguments. But the bottom line is I think it is important to respect other opinions, and certainly the person who has that opinion, whether you agree with them or not, they deserve our respect and to be treated cordially and civilly.
Well, thank you, Ed. It's been really great talking with you. I'm glad to have had a chance to sit in the car with you for a while. We don't have to stand out in the rain for the interview.
Yeah, the rain got harder as we continued to talk, so I think the timing was perfect, Susan. Again, good job on that, and great job to KHOI for all the wonderful pioneering effort that's going on here in Story County.
Thank you, Ed. Bye.
And just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head and they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun. And I said I didn't like the way he got things done. He's sleeping on the job. And those raindrops are falling on my head and they keep falling. But there's one thing I know. The blues they send to greet me won't defeat me. It won't be long till happiness steps up to greet me. Rain drops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. The cry is not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me. It won't be long till happiness steps up to greet me. Raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. The cry is not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining. 'Cause I'm free, nothing's worrying me.
Hey, what a great segue after that interview in the rain with Ed Fallon, the great Burt Bacharach song, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And I can see Paul Newman riding around on that bicycle right now. Well, this has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts today have been county reporters Paul Wearson and Susan Franson. We've been talking about how road trips have developed at the KHOI radio station here. Voices you heard on this program were Mildred Brendelin, Fenner Stevenson, Sandra Human Kelly, and Ed Fallon. The show was engineered by Rebecca Brown.
Music you heard was On the Road Again by Willie Nelson from The Essential Willie Nelson. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head by B.J. Thomas from the CD All Time Greatest Hits by B.J. Thomas. And I guess written by Burt Bacharach. And Come Ride on the Scenic Valley Railroad. And The Ballad of Kate Shelley, which, like our theme song, Backtrackin', is by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Now, you can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, where we are streaming live. You'll find recent shows on our homepage with links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join us, join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.